So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Bischoff looks ready for a fight. He's serious.
Coming to the ring at this time, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the man who has accepted this challenge. He is the chief executive officer of Titan Sports, Mr. Vincent K. McMahon.
Nothing. Well, Bischoff in the ring. Arms wide.
He came to fight.
Of course he did. And, you know, when Bumper says he's a first-degree black belt, well, we knew this too.
Wait a minute. Is this a sanctioned WCW NWO event, or is it not?
Yes, sir, it is.
Where the hell is it? So what do you do?
I guess we ring the bell and count to 10. If you don't show up, the match is over.
All right, get this. We're going to have to count Vinnie Mac out. Being that this isn't an official WCW event, is that correct? Why don't we all do it together? Give him the 10 count, ring the bell. I really was hoping he'd have the guts. Are you ready? All of you! One!
Forfeit and disqualification, Mr. Eric Bischoff.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so feeling about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space.
Welcome everybody to Review Away. John Pollock joined by Wei Ting. And today's show brought to you by Starbucks coffee. And Wei, you are drinking some San Pellegrino orange juice in a can?
Yeah, it is a sparkling orange beverage with 18% orange juice from concentrate.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm drinking a venti.
A venti what?
A coffee.
Coffee? You don't get anything special at Starbucks?
No. I like my just basic. The guy actually, for the first time, I always just order a coffee, and they're like, sure. And this time he asked me, he's like, mild or bold?
What does that mean?
Well, I had my headphones on, so first I thought he asked me mild or cold. I was like, what kind of question is that for coffee?
Yeah.
Then I took my headphones off, and he was like, mild or bold? And I went with mild. I had bold once, and it was gross.
What is the bold? Just a
it's just more
coffee?
Of a kick, but it tastes really strong, like...
Okay.
I don't know.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were a Tim Hortons guy.
It's not within walking distance here from our office, is it, Wei? I'm not going to lie. There have been days where I've gotten in my car and driven to Tim Hortons and then come back.
Wow. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Do you know we have a coffee machine here?
I don't use this. You know why? Because it's the cups in this place are gross.
Yeah, why don't you buy your own cups? That's what I do.
Oh, do you?
I bought my own pack of styrofoam cups for like $1.
I brought in a coffee cup once, and then the next day I came in and someone was fucking drinking from it.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
That's my cup that was on my desk.
It's like somebody kissing your woman.
Yes, never again am I using the free coffee machine here.
Well, come on. It's just if it's just the cup, that's the problem.
I'm supporting this upstart company, Starbucks. Okay. One day.
Yeah.
This would be a great part where we could so insert advertising onto this show.
For
people.
We'd be great.
The way we promote shit around us.
Yeah.
I think we do a pretty good job of it. I was listening to Kevin Smith's podcast this week, only for the Mick Foley reason. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of Kevin Smith, but not his podcast.
What is that?
I just find it's I don't know. There was this turn I made on Kevin Smith where I bought his book, My Boring Ass Life, mm-hmm. and that is what that book was.
Hmm.
It was just the most, and I hear it gets much better, but I couldn't get past the first 200 pages. And I don't know, his podcast is just, I don't know, if you're not into his world, I guess maybe, I'm sure, you know, if he listened to our podcast, he wouldn't get through 2 minutes of it, I'm
no,
sure.
No, he wouldn't.
You know, it's not a knock against the guy.
I really enjoyed his DVDs.
His stand-ups are my favorite. That
Q&As.
Got me through laser eye surgery.
Oh,
it was 4 hours of his stand-up because I couldn't watch anything.
But you're saying this is nothing like that? These podcasts?
I haven't heard enough of them that I can get. I know I'm going to get just murdered by people online saying, you're crazy, Pollock. You don't watch Zack Ryder's videos and you don't listen to Kevin Smith's podcasts.
No, yeah, this is
zero internet cred.
One step below Jason Agnew.
I'm not that hated yet. Where was I going with all this? Yeah, I was listening to their podcast. And like him and his wife, for the podcast they do together, they start the show off and it's like 10 minutes of ads they just read through.
Hold on, it's him and his wife?
That's one of the shows he does. He does a bunch with like...
Why would anybody want to hear a married couple's conversation?
Well, his wife used to be a reporter for USA Today, I believe.
So
she's got a newsy head on her shoulders.
Must be kind of
she's
weird.
She's got a good voice.
Yes, but it must be a little weird for your relationship, though. You know, like you spend all day talking to your wife. You spend all evening talking to your wife. But then when the microphones are on, do you talk differently? Do you just suddenly, you know, change it? How do you find new things to talk about? Or do they stay away from each other? Like you and I do. We stay away from each other pretty much all day until we're in here. So we have things to talk about.
Yeah.
Do you think Kevin Smith and his wife do
that? Maybe that's what they do. Maybe he just goes out and drives around all day and
sleep in
separate
beds.
Hangs out with buddies. And
okay.
Then he's got to go home to do a podcast with his wife.
That's the only time they talk, maybe.
Maybe it is.
It's kind of sad.
It's all saved up for 2.5 hours each week.
Hmm.
Anyway, so that was my whole discussion, was that they start off with 10 minutes of ads, which I would never want to do.
No, instead we start off with 10 minutes of nothing.
Nothing. I prefer that. It's more real.
This drink is really delicious. San Pellegrino. I believe you can find these in any general store.
San Pellegrino isn't paying us a penny, are they? Neither is Starbucks.
Not yet.
Yeah, not yet. If there's any Starbucks workers out there or San Pellegrino manufacturers,
okay,
listen,
yes.
You could be a permanent part of our podcast.
Yes.
Let's get into Slambury Way, a show that actually probably did make money at the time, which is unfathomable watching this. But let's paint the picture first, though, Way, for May of 1998, because this really was a time period where this was wrestling at its greatest heights, where mm-hmm. WCW, despite a just atrocious pay-per-view, was doing tremendous numbers. The Monday Nitro was still doing well. You could definitely see the problems in this company at this point, but pay-per-view numbers were up. House show business was very, very healthy, but WWF was creeping up, and they had just surpassed them in April. Just a month before this event, Way.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like all this huge run that WCW had, 83 weeks, whatever it had been snapped.
Mm-hmm.
And how does this company react? They go fucking crazy. And that is what this pay-per-view was, Way.
What do you mean, fucking crazy?
What do I mean? Well, tonight's show is going to be built around Eric Bischoff facing Vince McMahon.
Yes.
Perfectly rational idea. I'm really gonna take this pay-per-view to task over the next however long this podcast is. But the point being here, WCW was in extremely good shape at this point in time. But if you just watch this show isolated from the current setting of the time, you would have no idea.
No idea why.
This was a company that was losing its mind, is what came across in this show. And we start off with just a horrible graphics package. WCW was never known for their production, and this was certainly evident here. They're flashing words like controversy, power, outrage. Then they repeated controversy. And just B-roll of a building falling behind, which was actually quite appropriate as a metaphor here. And I just thought this was terrible, even for 1998. This was just looked shit.
Considering the amount of money that was being brought into the company, they didn't really seem to invest too much of it into their video production department.
Our announcers for tonight are Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay, and Bobby Heenan, and they state off the bat that Scott Hall has not shown up yet to the building.
And what is the story behind Scott Hall's disappearance at this time?
Well, I didn't know. This was one of many disappearances, and then in the main event, they mention when Hall does show up. This is the first time we've seen Scott Hall in months. Apparently he'd been gone for a while.
All right.
We're in Worcester, Massachusetts, way at the Centrum Center.
Centrum?
The Centrum.
The vitamin.
Yes. Hmm. The vitamin.
Okay.
This is the same city where Mick Foley would win his first WWF title a few months later.
All right.
In Worcester.
What is the thought process behind the Centrum company deciding to purchase this arena and attach their name to it? What type of crossover are they expecting? Come to watch the game and take a vitamin.
Yeah, maybe it's just you associate these great memories you had at the Centrum Center, and then when you see Centrum sold at your local convenience store, you'll be like, oh, maybe if I take this pill, this will remind me of that awesome tag match main event at Slamboree 98.
All right. That's good cross-promotion.
Yeah, it really is, you know. They show a video of Eric Bischoff on Thunder from a few days earlier, reiterating his challenge to Vince McMahon for the pay-per-view. And he reads, this was a legitimate letter sent to WCW by Jerry McDivitt, the WWE's attorney, stating that McMahon would not be at the pay-per-view and that WCW has no authority to suggest that he would be. And Bischoff says the invitation is still there and that Doug Dillinger will be outside of the arena waiting to escort Vince McMahon to his personal locker room. And then they show Dillinger from earlier in the day waiting for Vince outside. And there were fans planted, clearly planted, that are just booing Vince. We had a fake sign that read, McMahon, Mick sucks. And they have an all-access pass for Vince McMahon.
Oh, yeah, this was... Even Schiavone says nobody expects Vince to arrive here. Yet they go through all this shit.
Schiavone was a tool during this, though.
They go through all this simply so they could call Vince a coward for not showing up. And it's just very lame. It's like us calling out listeners, you know, here and not allowing them to respond.
This is... I couldn't believe they were doing this. But the challenge was made, I believe, the prior Monday. And live on Nitro.
And was this... What were the legal ramifications of this?
They actually, this never went.
Is this actually legal?
Oh, it's legal.
They can announce the name? They can announce the name.
Jerry McDivitt tried to make a case that by the WCW announcers ahead of time stating Vince McMahon will not be at the pay-per-view in wrestle speak, that means he will be showing up because we swerve our audiences. And whenever we say, oh, he's not coming. Like Scott Hall on this show. Mm-hmm. They said right at the beginning of the show, Scott Hall has not arrived yet.
Yeah.
So that was their logic. But this really went nowhere. Bischoff made the challenge on Nitro. Later that night, X-Pac came out on Raw and told Eric Bischoff to suck it. And Cornette and Ross made fun of Eric Bischoff on Raw. It was just your typical back and forth. This was Bischoff's paranoia from the ratings, you know, falling behind WWF. And you also have to remember a month before this, DX had done their big
invasion
style skit.
Well, it all sounds very compelling, actually, flipping back and forth to see all this.
Yeah, it's fans cool. Must have got a kick out of this shit, but to me, this was just a
bad company. Business.
For WCW to waste their time on this and send people to a pay-per-view knowing you're not delivering anything, it was just... It was like we're aware of the WWF that is surpassing us, and we're freaking out.
Right.
Did you catch this? The first match, Chris Benoit is making his entrance, and there was this midget mascot.
I did. Yeah, this was like
Did you look this up?
The bird from McDonald's.
The hell is this?
I don't know. It's a mascot. Like, you know, the bird mascot from McDonald's.
I had always heard about this mysterious mascot, but I had never seen it before. Until this show.
What is this mascot? Is this a WCW mascot?
Yeah, it was some WCW mascot that they were trying to get over, I guess.
This is weird.
Great job
they
did.
This guy in a pink bird suit dancing at the entrance as Chris Benoit walks out.
So we get Chris Benoit against Fit Finlay, with Finlay defending the television title. So hell of a match to start the show.
Yeah.
We get a competitive start. Both are exchanging holds and countering each other. Finlay works over the upper body of Benoit and sends him to the floor where Benoit is selling. And then Finlay wears him down with a camel clutch, a sleeper spot, and then Benoit tries to fight back. Crowd was really hot here in this opener. Yeah. Worcester, a very good crowd overall.
Mm-hmm. In case you're wondering why Finlay has the name Fit, Shivani explains it. He's a mountain climber, and he's a skier. He plays rugby. He plays soccer. He's fit day in and day out.
So is he taking on unfit Chris? Is that what they're insinuating?
Chris Benoit probably mountain climbed and skied in his day.
They go to the floor, and Benoit finally gets a chair, and he hits Finlay in the back. Crowd explodes for the chair shot. Then they go back into the ring, and Benoit goes for the suicide dive with Finlay swinging the chair at his head. And this was a spot that Benoit would do countless times in the WWE. I actually did not mind this spot. If you saw this, Finlay really didn't even connect with Benoit, and they shot from behind Finlay instead of the side view that they always do in WWE. And therefore, it was pretty much Benoit got hit in the arm. He landed on the pads below, and Finlay didn't have to, like, fucking kill him with a chair shot, and you had all the effect of what this move was without any of the damage.
So it was basically Benoit suicide diving into the chair.
It would have looked like shit if you had shot it at the side view, like a profile shot of Benoit going into the chair, but instead they shot behind Finlay, where you got you got all the sizzle of the move without having to actually kill yourself. What a novel concept in professional wrestling.
I didn't watch that closely, and so good for them if they designed it that way.
Bobby Heenan notes
that... By the way, was this a no DQ match?
I assumed it was, sure.
Okay.
Heenan notes that Finlay couldn't have hit him any harder if he was Mark McGuire, which was a relevant comment in May of 1998. Mm-hmm. Benoit builds up to two consecutive German suplexes, but Finlay then ducks under the ropes and Benoit gets off. Benoit goes for the crossface, Finlay reaches the ropes. Then we see a snap suplex, and Benoit signals for the diving headbutt. Crowd really into that. And then he climbs to the top rope, and Booker T walks out at the entrance. And this, he gets the karma freeze. He just freezes on the top rope, stops his diving headbutt to look at Booker, to look at him.
What do you mean the karma freeze?
Where karma comes out, and the victim is paralyzed and cannot continue moving.
Oh, okay.
The karma freeze. And this allows Finlay to drop kick him in the back of the head onto the floor. Finlay puts him back in the ring. Benoit comes back with a small package. Finlay kicks out, and then Finlay hits the tombstone pile driver for the win.
Really?
Finlay retains the title.
Really good match. I really enjoyed this.
Solid opening match.
Yes.
Not a shock here for WCW at the time.
I really liked Mike Tenay in this match. Another shocker, I guess. But Mike Tenay was perfect for these types of technical matches. And I actually think I prefer him as a third man compared to him taking the lead in TNA right now. I think he's great at calling technique, but I think he's a bit too dry for getting over storytelling and characters.
Yeah.
I think he actually worked well with Shivani here.
I had the home video of this way, so it pretty much just cut from match to match. But I did get to briefly see Chris Jericho talking to WCWWrestling.com. But
I saw that.
They didn't air any of it. Or you couldn't really hear what he was saying.
Okay, well, he says, what did he say? He said it's a conspiracy against him, gauntlet match that was to come. Or this battle royal. He says it was some type of conspiracy. He talks really fast, so I felt bad for the guy typing all his words.
Gotta transcribe all your online interviews.
And then Shivani coming back. Did you hear this?
Nope.
He's like, it's tough to decide who's the most annoying person on that table, like burying Lee Marshall, who was there interviewing Chris Jericho.
Yeah, nice of Tony Schiavone there to give his colleagues some credit. From Chris Benoit and Fit Finlay, we go to Bryan Adams against Lex Luger. And Schiavone explains that the next match is about revenge for Lex Luger, but not against any particular member of the New World Order. He's just randomly picking somebody for revenge for somebody attacking Rick Steiner. Okay. Ooh, here's my $30, WCW. Yeah. You've sold me on that. There is no reason for Bryan Adams to be in this match other than he is the person Luger picked.
I got to pay for that. Awesome. See Luger beat up a random guy.
Bryan Adams comes out with our favorite interview subject who turned us down, Vincent. And Adams is knocked to the floor right away. And then Luger knocks Adams and Vincent together. They stay on the floor for a long, long time. And Luger attacks the left arm of Bryan Adams. There's a power slam to Adams in the ring. Then Luger gets distracted by Vincent on the apron. And it leads to Adams coming off the ropes and hitting a horrendous pile driver to Lex Luger. Mm-hmm. And Heenan says that Bryan is nursing a shoulder injury to cover for his botched pile driver spot. Then Adams gets the heat with a mystifying kick to the chest. And then Luger comes back with a kick to the gut of Adams. Luger knocks Vincent off the apron, ducks a clothesline, and he puts the torture rack on Bryan Adams for the win. And then they show the highlight package from the match. What were they going to put together in this highlight package? A double clothesline spot and Adams vocally telling Vincent to interfere. And then Luger lifting Adams for the rack. Bryan Adams gets a hell of a passway as one of the shittier workers in history.
What?
Remember that Road Wild match with him and Steve McMichael?
Nope.
If you put a gun to my head, that's the worst Major League pay-per-view match I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, well...
this was bad, too.
It's pretty awful. I mean...
So are we at about 500 now on this pay-per-view? Whatever good Benoit Finley was, this was the opposite
pretty
in
much.
Horrible wrestling.
Yeah, pretty much. I guess he gets a pass because he's a big guy. But then again...
No,
a lot of big guys get some flack. So, uh-huh. He wasn't good here. Neither was Lex.
Then I was wondering, you know, what would be the promo equivalent of this shitty match? And we go to Perry Saturn. This man was not built to talk. He says there will be no gauntlet match tonight, and if they have a problem, they know where he is. The same locker room as you. And I'm only looking out for myself tonight, not Raven. I will face Bill Goldberg tonight and win the U.S. title. If you were like me and just watching this 13 years later, you would be very confused.
Listen, this
thankfully, I knew he was part of the flock and had left. But the average person would have no clue from this. This was a horrible promo.
Is he actually a part of the flock at this time?
No, he had left the flock here.
Okay,
that was the story.
Okay.
But they know where he is. I'm in the same locker room as you. Can't we get some names here, some specifics?
This is really the only time I can recall Saturn being a serious guy, cutting a serious promo. I've only ever seen him in comedy.
Do you want to also gimmicks. Describe the setting here?
Well, they had shot this. I mean, I give him credit for...
on a dark room,
I give him
on
credit,
a stool.
I give him credit for shooting something different. They sat Saturn in a room, and they put a TV behind Saturn, and they hooked up the camera's feed right into the TV, so you have that, infinite TV within a screen within a screen thing.
Oh, it's so 95.
Well,
which is almost cutting edge at this point.
Hey, for WCW, this is high-budget stuff.
Up next was the Cruiserweight Battle Royal, which lots of people probably remember very fondly. Mm-hmm. David Penzer goes to announce the participants, but Chris Jericho comes out, and he's going to introduce all the Cruiserweights because the gimmick is whoever wins the Battle Royal will get an immediate title shot against Jericho. And people will either love this because of Chris Jericho's comedy, and this was really a big... kind of promo for Jericho that people really started to click with Jericho because of his comedic timing. The other side of it was that he just buried the entire Cruiserweight division here. Like, he really made them look goofy.
That's his character, though. That's what you're supposed to do. He's...
all right.
You know.
He
did, though. I agree with you. But come on. Look at what Ciclope was wearing.
He introduced Super Kalo. Chavo Guerrero, who he introduced from El Paso, Mexico. Ciclope, who he calls a rags-to-riches-to-rags story.
Wearing like this jack-o'-lantern outfit.
Yeah, well, that's what Ciclope wore. Damien, who Jericho points out cannot afford a mask, so he uses paint. El Dandy, El Griot, which translates to the cricket, which is the reaction he got. Juventud Guerrera, who he refers to as the ugliest man in the sport today. Marty Jannetty, Billy Kidman, Evan Courageous, Lenny Lane, Psychosis, Silver King, who he had a pretty good line here saying if he had if he got two more wins, he'd be upgraded to gold.
Golden King.
Johnny Swinger, and Villano Four.
Mm-hmm.
And that was our Cruiserweight Battle Royal. And the rules here was that you didn't have to go over the top rope, just have your feet touch the floor. So it was a Divas Battle Royal. Heenan says he doesn't even care about this match. He actually said this. He said, I don't even care about this match. He just wants to listen to Chris Jericho's commentary. And Schiavone responds, you've got to be ribbing. Oh, I hated this commentary.
Why? Team. Why? What's wrong with
they were so
ribbing?
I don't give a fuck. Was Tanay was the only one who like put any effort into this. Schiavone had like already at this point, like just months after their peak, he was like back against a chair and feet up doing this commentary. You know what I mean? Like he just
didn't. They're just having fun.
Well, that's great, way. They're just having fun.
Yeah.
They're just having fun. They try to do these high-flying spots, but really tough to pull off in a battle royal. There's no focus. I mean, battle royals are not designed for technical matches or high-flying. Hoovy eliminates Kalo with a drop kick, then Silver King's out. The camera completely misses Hoovy jumping off of the top rope into a Hurricane Rana on Psychosis. Marty Jannetty eliminated by El Dandy. What a fall for this guy.
Yeah.
Kidman he tosses Hoovy into Lenny Lane on the turnbuckle, and then Lane's eliminated. Damien does the old school, which we saw in the Super J Cup a couple of weeks ago, eh? Then he's crotched and tossed out by Hoovy with a springboard dropkick. Chavo then dropkicks Dandy out. Chavo runs as Kidman ducks and pulls the ropes down, and Chavo's eliminated. And it's funny, of the final five here, way, three of them, Chavo, Kidman, and Dean Malenko, all have WWE jobs now. So,
wow.
How interesting is that? Of the legacy of WCW talent on this show who are working with the top company in the world. It's the Cruiserweights.
Mm-hmm.
And a few more eliminations. Final two are Ciclope and Juventud. They stare at one another for a long time. Then they shake hands and Juventud eliminates himself. And Ciclope then bends over, unmasks, and one of the biggest pops in WCW history, it's revealed as Dean Malenko, who had basically gone home after his feud with Chris Jericho, where he couldn't beat Chris. Chris had berated Dean and his father passing away, and not all that different, really, from the Lawler Cole heat.
Mm-hmm. Except this was a much better match.
And a bigger payoff, yes. Crowd, like, literally went nuts.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that somebody posted on the wall comparing this pop to Mick Foley winning the title months later, both in the same arena, and two of the bigger pops you're ever going to hear.
Wow.
And this was a reaction I didn't recall until watching this show, of just how nuts everyone went for Dean Malenko. Mm-hmm. Like, they went crazy here for Dean Malenko.
They did.
Wait a minute.
Ciclope, what's he doing here?
He's unmasking.
He's unmasking.
The reveal was done really well.
Jericho was in the ring for the reveal. His facials were great. Mm-hmm. And we immediately went into a match where Dean Malenko showed more fire here at the start of this match than any time in his whole career. The announcers even brought that up. It was all Malenko. And then Jericho blocked a vertical suplex by Malenko. And he got behind him, drop kicks Malenko to the floor. Then the camera misses a suicide dive or a pescado. It was one of the other by Malenko to the floor. I've never understood WCW production. Like, they always would miss shit like this.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, Juventud remained at ringside here. If you remember, Juventud was unmasked by Chris Jericho a few months prior at Super Brawl. And then Jericho cuts off Malenko with a flapjack onto the ropes and then a running senton. Jericho yells that this is a conspiracy, and Malenko counters the lion tamer, gets an ankle lock applied as Jericho makes the ropes. Then Malenko goes from a fireman's carry into a gut buster off the second turnbuckle, and he applies the Texas cloverleaf. Huge reaction for this. And then Jericho is going for the ropes, but it's Malenko who pulls Jericho out and into the middle of the ring, and Jericho taps out. Really well-booked match. Jericho briefly got some heat, and Malenko came back. Crowd was really into him. And I wouldn't be surprised if, I don't know if you remember, the first time Jericho and Rock, they had a match at the 2001 No Mercy, and it was Jericho did a similar spot where he had the walls on Rock, and Rock, the crowd was so into Jericho, and Rock was about to reach the ropes, and Jericho pulled him into the middle, and it was the first time I had seen Jericho do that, and it got this awesome reaction, and I wonder if it was this match that kind of inspired that, because I don't know how often you had seen that spot before. A great heat spot of a guy almost making the ropes and then mm-hmm. the babyface pulling him into the middle.
Yeah.
So really well done, and Dean Malenko wins the Cruiserweight title.
Yeah, really well done. Really.
Probably
really
the highlight good. Of the pay-per-view. Up next, we've got the Bowery Deathmatch with the rule that you must knock out your opponent.
It's
a last man standing match. You have a 10 count to get back.
With a cage, with a ceiling, and weapons. There you go.
Awesome.
Bowery Death Cage.
But first we go to the Vinnie Mac cam, and there's a helicopter following a white limousine that's coming towards the arena, and they tease that it's Vince McMahon. Doug Dillinger goes to investigate, and Schiavone says,
well, there's a white limousine outside. This is our Vinnie Mac cam on a helicopter high above here, the Centrum, as a white limousine is pulling up. Now, I don't want to read too much into this, but wrestlers arrive in limousines all the time, and I believe most of the wrestlers are inside right now. So what are we going to do? Are we just going to wait and see?
It's just parked down the street. It's not even...
All right.
Not even in the lot.
Well, I've been told now by Craig Leathers that Doug Dillinger is going to come out and investigate it and see exactly what's going on.
Yeah, Doug, that's a car. It's the back of it.
Well, I don't know. We're looking very, very hard. Doug, maybe he'll look in the front there, because if Jim Ross jumps out and carries his bags, you know that is Vince.
Well, if Jim Ross jumps out carrying his bags, you know it's Vince McMahon. Boy, that Schiavone was happy when he came back from the WWF and Jim Ross was the number one announcer in WCW.
Well, he could have been told to say those things.
Oh, I'm sure he was, but I don't think Schiavone was ever a big Jim Ross fan to begin with.
Sure.
DDP comes out, climbs on top of the cage, does his diamond cutter pose, and it's DDP against Raven. No titles, just a Bowery death match. And, yes, as Wei said, it's pretty much a last man standing match inside of a cage with weapons. Raven comes out with the Riot Squad, who were not the Basham brothers. And DDP attacks Raven with a VCR, officially dating this pay-per-view by years and years and years.
Some of these fans start chanting VCR.
Raven makes a comeback with a garbage can. Then the Flock comes out and knocks down the Riot Squad, and Scotty Riggs has bolt cutters and enters the cage. But Van Hammer, who was formerly part of the Flock, runs down, juiced to the gills.
God damn. Scott Putsky did it.
Yep, he was one candidate, and I had a few others on this show. And he stops the Flock with a stop sign. And a fan touches Van Hammer, and Van Hammer almost swings at the fan. He was so angered. Some guys just cannot deal with fans touching them. I don't know if it's just so little disregard for these dirty fans or just not liking to be touched. But you know what, wrestlers? It's part of the gig.
Being touched?
You get touched.
Sure. Okay, when you're that close, yeah.
So, Van Hammer, I was glad you caught this, because he looked pissed.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see Van Hammer handcuffs Reese, the 7-foot-whatever giant they had in the Flock, to a guardrail. My God, how untalented must this guy Ron Reese have been to never get a significant push at that size? Like, this guy was gigantic and never did anything in wrestling.
Yeah, shitty gimmick. Just a member of the Flock. Mike Tenay was noticeably quieter in this match.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have that much to do.
Wow. He got to call Benoit Finlay and the Cruiserweights. He's done. Yeah. Oh, he's getting ready for the next match. The Riot Squad is unmasked or unhelmeted as Billy Kidman and Horace Boulder. And Kidman misses DDP with a stop sign and hits Horace, like right out of the Three Stooges. DDP diamond cuts Horace. Then Kidman is swinging from the top of the cage, and he swings into a diamond cutter from DDP, which looked all right. Different delivery of the move. And then Raven comes back, and he hits DDP. He hit him with a diamond cutter, right?
Yes.
Or, yeah.
Yes.
And then misses a chair and ends up taking a diamond cutter from DDP, and DDP makes it to his feet to beat the count and get the win. DDP goes to celebrate with the crowd, and then another masked Riot Squad member comes in, locks up all the members of the flock to the cage and to the ropes, and then he handcuffs Raven with his arms stretched out against the cage. And this started a light ECW chant. This was out of the, you know, the infamous crucifixion
yes.
angle that mm-hmm. ECW did. And this, he finally handcuffs Raven, and this dragged forever.
Mm-hmm.
This took a long time. And then the Riot Squad member took his helmet off, and it was Mortis. And zero reaction for this unmasking.
No.
This was not anything close to the Dean Malenko reveal.
What about the next unmasking?
Well, then Mortis, a character who has been in WCW for well over a year, year and a half at this point, takes his mask off. It's Chris Kanyon, and El Grillo made a cameo, the cricket. Holy shit.
Man, just...
No reaction way at all. Yeah,
nothing.
And I mean, you cannot blame any sound or miking of the crowd because we just heard Dean Malenko get fucking the biggest pop in history.
Well, that's a bit different, though, because... Okay,
it was a character you were attached with and meant something, whereas this guy, you had never seen Chris Kanyon before.
And the idea that somebody would wear a mask underneath a mask is a little... It's quite amusing to me. You wore two masks under it. I thought it was just it was an okay match when it was just Raven and DDP in the ring, but it was way overbooked.
Nothing beat Mike Tenay. He might not have spoken a lot during this match, but boy, did he make his words count at the end when Mortis unmasks. The first time we see Chris Kanyon's face, and what are the first words out of the announcers? Mike Tenay goes, that's that vendor who's been showing up on Nitro.
Was that the gimmick?
I guess he had been a random vendor at all Nitro events, selling hot dogs and shit.
Okay.
Raven is cuffed, and Kanyon delivered one of the sickest, nastiest chair shots I've ever seen.
Mm.
This was brutal. Just brutal.
Yeah, well, yeah.
This is one of the worst chair shots I've ever seen, Wei.
In your whole life?
Yeah, this would be right up there.
Huh.
This was gross.
Okay.
Well, no way this guy did not have a concussion as a result of this. Like, Kanyon didn't hold back a thing here when he swung for the fences at Raven. Outside the arena, we have one of the security guys, might have been Doug Dillinger. He had this pictures of Vince McMahon, Steve Austin, X-Pac, and DX, which is technically... intellectual property.
Yeah,
copyright images of the WWE. I would have sued him just for that. And for the chair shot angle. And they review various camera angles all across the arena. What a waste of time this was.
Mm-hmm.
God damn, was this stupid.
They want you to get your money's worth.
Ugh. Then they went to just a bunch of random crowd shots, and they pan across the front row, and some dude with his oversized arm lifts his shirt up to show off his temporary AC/DC tattoo on his bicep. Oh, God. Up next, Ultimo Dragon against Eddie Guerrero, who is accompanied by Chavo Guerrero. And get this Wei, the storyline is that Chavo is property of Eddie Guerrero, and he's in the corner of Eddie, but if Eddie loses, Chavo Guerrero will be free. How does TNA come up with their storylines for their women?
I don't know. God damn it. It sucked even then, too. It's not like they copied good storylines. They copied other shitty storylines.
They cut to a sign that said, Eddie Guerrero is my favorite wrestler. The heel. Why? Why would you cut to that?
Lack of sense, I'm guessing.
Early on, Eddie is complaining to Dragon about pulling his hair. They do a good back and forth lucha sequence. Kind of gets the crowd into things.
Everything looks flawless here.
Yeah, looked really good. Eddie gets the heat. He chokes Dragon with a cable on the floor, and this leads to Chavo trying to stop Eddie, which at least logically made sense.
Yes.
Though Eddie could have been disqualified here. And the announcers even brought this up, that if Eddie was disqualified, Chavo would be free.
Okay, yes. And so why wouldn't Chavo intentionally cause the DQ? Is that right?
Because he wants to be honorable. He doesn't want to loophole his way out of this contract. Right, he wants to earn his way out.
There you go.
Eddie gets crotched on the ropes, and then he's sent to the floor. Dragon hits an Asahi moonsault. Then Dragon hits a spinning backbreaker, a two count, and then he mounts Eddie with punches and then hits a moonsault off the top for a two count. Guerrero stops Dragon off the top rope and hits a tornado DDT, and they bring up that this is Chavo's move, but then Eddie misses a frog splash, and Dragon comes up for the Mahastral cradle for a two count. Dragon goes for the Dragon Sleeper, but Eddie's able to counter it and applies his own Dragon Sleeper after using the ropes for leverage. Chavo then knocks Eddie's hand off the ropes. Eddie slaps Chavo, and then as Dragon comes from behind with a spinning heel kick, Eddie ducks, and Dragon takes out Chavo, and this leads to Eddie hitting a brainbuster, which is more of a vertical suplex, and then a frog splash, and Eddie gets the win here. And Chavo snaps after the match. He attacks Ultimo, and he yells at Eddie, and then Eddie offers his chin, or his cheek, to be slapped, but Chavo cannot slap his uncle. And they leave together, and Eddie is smiling that he has brainwashed Chavo to be a heel.
I didn't understand. I didn't understand a lot of this.
This was very confusing.
I thought they were going to double turn him, like have Chavo turn heel, but Eddie babyface. But I don't know. In the end, I just enjoyed the match for what it was, and I really did enjoy this match. But the crowd didn't really seem to react to anything. Some people in the crowd even chanted boring.
They go to Vince McMahon's personal locker room, where it reads, Vince McMahon, the reason for the ratings.
Okay.
What?
The reason for their shitty rating?
Is it the reason for WWF kicking your ass now? Well, not quite kicking their ass, but beating them at this point.
I guess so.
Shivani notes
they
that...
They really went all out by printing these signs,
This was so stupid. Shivani notes that some people walk the walk, and some don't.
What
does that mean? Next up, we had Bill Goldberg versus Perry Saturn for the United States title. They went about 48 minutes. I was amazed. Just all the Goldberg signs. Did you see them all here?
Like sure.
Everyone who had a sign, it was something for Goldberg.
Why were you amazed? That's
wow. It's just incredibly over. Mm-hmm. Saturn was wearing these cut-off black jean jorts. Very 1980s.
Very 2011.
I guess so. Well, these were cutoffs. Okay. Cena at least gets the actual jorts.
Yeah, he had them professionally hemmed.
We see a press slam from Goldberg, then a running clothesline as Saturn powders to the floor. Saturn comes back with a leg sweep and then a slap to the face. Goldberg bolts to his feet and tosses Saturn into the corner. Saturn hits a kick off the apron to knock Goldberg into the barricade. And then hits a spinning heel kick back into the ring. We get a long rear chin lock spot, and then Goldberg powers out of a sleeper for a belly-to-belly suplex. Tanay states that we're not sure about Goldberg in a lengthy match, and that's what I was thinking at this point. Saturn brings a chair into the ring and then hits a drop kick off the chair into Goldberg. Then he goes for a second time off the chair. He gets speared in midair, takes the jackhammer, and Goldberg gets the win, and they announce his streak improving to 88-0. This was a badly booked match. A, it went longer than 2 minutes. B, it was two baby faces, or at least with Saturn, a guy you were trying to push as a baby face. Mm-hmm. So he had to get some shine in this match against a guy that should never be selling, especially against Perry Saturn. I didn't like this match.
It was odd because he ended up working as a heel for some of this match as well, Perry Saturn. And Goldberg was just... I felt bad for Saturn because Goldberg was just destroying this guy.
Goldberg
dropping
really,
him.
He you watch these matches.
Scary.
He really was bad.
Uh-uh.
And better to be hidden. Oh, then it continues. Michael Buffer introduces Eric Bischoff, who comes out with his fist taped up. And then they introduce Vincent K. McMahon, who gets some booze. This also stupid. Like, you're positioning Eric Bischoff as your company representative that's fighting for WCW, who's a heel. Like, this was just like, ugh.
Yeah. Well,
the whole thing was dumb.
Well, Vince was a heel as well.
Okay.
I guess they want you to suspend disbelief. I don't know.
They start the match. They count to 10. They award the match to Bischoff. I hated all of this. It was pointless. It was going nowhere. And it was just, to me, Eric Bischoff panicking.
There were a few notable signs in the crowd. One fan holds a sign that reads, "McMahon fears Bischoff." But Bischoff is spelled B-I-C-H-O-F-F. And then there's another fan that has a "McMahon fears Bischoff" sign. But this time, Bischoff is spelled B-I-S-C-O-F-F.
C-O-F-F.
God damn.
Bischoff. Oh,
it's not that difficult, honestly. The internet was around at the time. If you're going to spend the effort to make a sign, spell, just type it up. And
or just watch Nitro and look at the key.
Some idiots. Like, it really doesn't bode well for the stereotype, you know?
Next up was the grudge match from hell, they announced it as. Bret Hart against Randy Savage with Roddy Piper as the guest referee. Hart gets a decent heel response.
I don't know why. I mean, I know why, but why was Bret Hart positioned as a heel in this? In WCW at this time, in 1998.
The great question. No one seemed to have the answer for. There was a sign in the crowd that read, "Hogan plus Hart, more than just friends."
Huh.
Losers. Savage was my other Scott Putski candidate. He was jacked here.
Sure.
So who would we give it to, Randy Savage or Van Hammer?
I would put Lex Luger up there as well.
Luger is like, I almost...
What do you mean?
It's
still
a given.
Still deserves it.
That's like, you know, going back and...
Well, Savage was wearing a shirt, wasn't he?
No, he wasn't. Not for the match.
I don't remember.
Came out maybe.
Well, you choose.
Oh, let's give it to Van Hammer.
Okay.
He was pretty crazy.
Van Hammer. Congratulations.
Van Hammer, everybody. Savage has a right knee brace on, and he was going to need knee surgery shortly after this event. They were going to get him for all he was worth here at the end. Early on, Piper gets on the floor, throws Bret into the ring after Bret's trying to leave. Very basic offense from Savage here at the start until Hart gets to heat and works the knee of Savage. They brawled on the floor. Hart sent Savage into the crowd. Then Hart hit a double axe handle off the barricade, and they brawl throughout the crowd with Piper following. Just a lot of shortcuts here to work around Savage and his limitations. And just as I'm writing that down, Shivani writes, "They know all the tricks. They know how to get the crowd going." He's just having fun. Then Shivani just announces out of nowhere, "Scott Hall has arrived at the building." I fully believe this was no storyline. He legitimately had not showed up. Savage is selling the knee and then holding it as Hart works it over. And Shivani then states that the story here is Savage continuing to kick out and come back from death. Savage cuts off Hart, fights back, and hits the top rope elbow and gets a two count after a delay. In this regard, I thought Shivani was actually pretty decent here in trying to get across Randy as the babyface that's trying to overcome his bad knee. I'll give credit to Shivani here, where I thought he was good. Hart then gets the sharpshooter applied, and Elizabeth runs out. Savage gets out of the sharpshooter, and he puts the sharpshooter on Bret, but Bret reaches the ropes. Then Elizabeth, who clearly ran out too early, is just standing at ringside waiting for her spot, then comes in, shoves Roddy Piper, and then Savage and Piper shove each other. Then Hart hits a low blow to Savage, and from behind, he hits Piper in the back of the head with a foreign object. Then Hulk Hogan runs out. He takes out the leg of Savage, which looked horrible. He hit, like, the lower calf of Randy Savage, which was supposed to be his knee he hit. And Savage bumps, and Hogan then wraps his knee, Savage's knee around the post. Piper regains consciousness and sees Savage holding the foreign object and assumes that Savage hit him in the back of the head. Hart puts the Savage in the sharpshooter, and Piper immediately calls for the bell when he sees Savage holding the foreign object because he's fucking Savage for hitting him in the back of the head when it was really Bret that hit him in the back of the head. And they try to explain this. Hart gets the win. Then Hart spits on Savage, exits the ring. What an overbooked finish.
Oh, boy. Way too much. The match was not that good to begin with, and I thought they did a good job of the leg selling, but everything else was just overbooked and very boring.
So you know what this built to at the next pay-per-view?
What?
Hulk Hogan and Bret Hart against Roddy Piper and Randy Savage. And then immediately after that match, Roddy Piper and Randy Savage, who just teamed, would have a singles match together.
Okay.
The partners would have a match after.
Oh, God.
Because Randy would not watch Piper did not watch the replay of this pay-per-view.
Well, and I thought you said Savage was going went into
he had one more pay-per-view surgery. After this, and then he had surgery.
Oh, okay. I mean, not to mention the stars you're actually seeing in this are like 10 years past their prime.
Yep.
You know, with the exception of Bret.
Heenan adds the line at the end of this match: "Here is your winner, the Hitman, and he can hit."
Oh, nice.
Up next is our main event way, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, accompanied by Dusty Rhodes, taking on Sting and the Giant for the tag titles. And why don't you explain the storyline going into this one?
I'll do my best, okay? I'll tell you what we have going into this match. We have the returning Outsiders with the returning Scott Hall. And, of course, the Outsiders are now part of the newly formed NWO Wolfpack, the babyface faction of the NWO. And they are taking on Sting, who represents WCW, and the Giant, who for some reason represents the heel NWO Hollywood. So you have a match featuring a babyface team of the Outsiders against a half-heel, half-babyface team of the Giant and Sting.
So you have the ultimate babyface and Sting teaming with the bigger heel in this match, the Giant, against the two moderate babyfaces, Hall and Nash.
I'd say they're full babyfaces at this time.
Okay, so we have three babyfaces and one heel in this match. That's awesome. That's an equation for just a fantastic dynamic. This was only 5 months after that big Starcade with Hogan and Sting, and look how far they had fallen. Sting was already teaming up with NWO members.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't know what actually happened with the term, but they explained here that the Giant never even really gave a... He gave no explanation for joining the NWO. He was just saying that it was time to make a decision.
He just did.
And I know the point somehow, I guess, is to, you know, create suspense and to set up this, you know, the finish of this match, but... I don't know. It just feels so poorly written, and I just felt no type of suspense at all.
Mike Tenay states that Scott Hall looks in good shape considering we haven't seen him on television for a couple of months. This is one half of your tag team champions. Hall goes for a choke slam to Sting, hits a choke slam to Sting, and then mocks the Giant. I had no clue who the heels were here. Giant and Nash in the ring together. Absolutely painful. There was one spot where Giant got onto one knee and pulled the hair of Nash without fully pulling the hair. This was great. There was a terrible boot spot to Sting by Nash as fans chant for Scott Hall. Giant then misses Nash off the top rope, and this was where I made mention to Way to watch the two fans in the front row who just went to town on each other fighting.
Oh, I saw that.
This was the best work in the whole match.
It looked like they were play fighting. Were they actually fighting?
But they fell.
Oh, yes. They tripped, and one of the friends got really mad at the other.
This match went on forever. Nash went for the powerbomb. Scott Hall got into the ring, hit Nash from behind with the title, and allowed Giant to pin Nash, so Scott Hall helped lose the titles for himself.
It was really stupid, because like, they had the Giant, the only heel in this match, working for the hot tag. Here.
Yep.
He was actually like trying to you know, rally the crowd by you know,
the heel.
Slapping the turnbuckle.
Completely lost.
The only heel here. But in the end, it was all for another swerve.
So the end result is that the Giant and Sting are tag champions. The Giant and Scott Hall are together joining NWO Hollywood. Sting is confused. Nash is laid out. And the big question is, how will Sting and Giant team together? And will Sting join the NWO? And why did Hall cost Nash and himself the tag titles? Well, and you know what this built to at the next pay-per-view, eh? The Giant versus Sting in a singles match for the tag titles.
Oh,
for
God.
Control of the tag titles. Okay. The winner could choose their partner.
Whatever. You know, I'll give them credit. At least they kept Hall and Giant out of the ring.
Great.
Together. So, it's just like, in the end, it all makes sense when you watch back the match back. But the amount of effort that it takes me to just piece it all together, it just takes away any reaction that I guess I was supposed to have from watching this.
I always say to myself that, you know, TNA is pretty bad right now, and maybe it's worse than WCW. And then I watch a pay-per-view like this, I'm like, man, it's tough. I don't know. I might actually say, no, I won't say. TNA of like 2 years ago was by far better than WCW.
Yeah.
But right now, I don't know. It's really close.
Oh, boy. Well, I will say at least WCW gave you some great undercard matches.
That is true.
So this match, I think we had three of them. We had an Eddie match, a Jericho match, a Benoit match. So I give this pay-per-view a 6.5 out of 10, simply for those three matches.
I give it a 4.5 because the bad really, really brought down the good. And I hated the last two matches. Goldberg-Saturn was pretty bad, too. And all the Vince shit was just so counterproductive and just silly. So that will wrap up our review of Slamboree 98. What a memorable show, everybody. So let's get into the feedback, way.
Tony Sakic, I distinctively remember one moment from Slamboree, and it is one of my favorite WCW moments ever. Dean Malenko's unmasking. To me, it shows a moment where they severely dropped the ball, as it may have been the biggest WCW pop I've ever seen, and it did not involve any of the main eventers. Had WCW listened to the fans and pushed talent accordingly, maybe they would exist today.
Blaine, I don't think I ever saw the entire pay-per-view, but what I did see of it was quite good. Benoit versus Finlay was a great match, as was Eddie versus Ultimo. And to the best of my knowledge, this was the first Brett Randy Savage match since 1987. They did one in 94, I believe, but it wasn't televised. I don't think WCW ever capitalized on that, nor did they bring up the fact that Brett idolized Savage when he first started in the WWE. The one thing that sticks out on this pay-per-view to me was, in my opinion, one of the greatest comedy segments of all time. It was before the Cruiserweight Battle Royal when Jericho was introducing each guy. He introduced Juventud as the ugliest man in the world and called El Dandy the winner of the Lou Ferrigno lookalike contest, and introduced Chavo from El Paso, Texas. It was comedy gold, and it was so obvious that there was no script to speak of. This was all Jericho.
El Paso, Mexico.
Yeah. Sorry. I can't make mistakes, yes. Naturally. I will just throw this out there, okay? If it was Kevin Nash doing this instead of Chris Jericho, people would have shit on this as sure. as just toxic poison, yeah, to WCW.
You might be right. Steve Kasson, I think this paper, you know, okay, but the difference was Jericho lost his match. Afterwards,
I guess you could say he got his comeuppance at the end, but I mean, you know, pretty much labeled all these guys as goofs here in the ring.
Steve Kasson, I think this pay-per-view will be most remembered for Bischoff's open challenge to Vince. I remember watching this pay-per-view and believing how cool Bischoff was, which had a lot to do with the way he presented himself with the jeans, leather jacket, etc., as opposed to McMahon's corporate look. Malenko is still one of my top five wrestlers, and the pop he got when he unmasked is, to me, legendary. Now, I know these WCW pay-per-views can be formulaic, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. You had some of the best wrestlers here, working with Mr. Pollock's favorite wrestler, Chris Benoit. Eddie Guerrero versus Ultimo Dragon, Jericho and Malenko, DDP and his feud with Raven, even Goldberg had a decent bout with Saturn.
Yeah, I'll disagree on that.
Savage Heart was...
Whoa, sorry! Oh shit. I'm sorry, boy.
My San Pellegrino.
Fuck.
No, it's alright. I'd finished.
Oh, okay. I thought it spilled.
You're terrible with that, by the way. I can't count the number of drinks you've spilt on me over the years.
There's been a few.
Yeah, there's been tons. Even Goldberg had a decent bout with Saturn. Savage Heart was nothing special, but a sight to see.
Yeah, alright. Ross, I watched a couple of matches from this pay-per-view on YouTube. The opening match between Chris Benoit and Finlay was a solid match, but as always found myself cringing whenever Benoit took a stiff head bump. The other match I found interesting was the Eddie versus Ultimo Dragon match, which was a great match for sure. WCW did have its moments for sure. The name Iron Mike Tenay still cracks me up.
Okay. Dennis Amaya, looking back at Slamboree 1998, it was bittersweet for me. It's a moment in time where WCW was still very hot, but looking back, you could see that the company was breaking from the inside. This is a show was pretty good, thanks to all the undercard. The end of the Cruiserweight Battle Royal is one of my favorite moments in WCW history. The pop that the vanilla midget Dean Malenko got was the biggest of the night and one of the bigger ones in WCW. The rest of the undercard was also pretty good, especially Jericho's introductions for the Battle Royal. The two top matches were marred with overbooking. The Savage Heart match had the potential to be a great match, but it was kept down thanks to the special ref garbage and the overbooking of the ending. It's sad to see one of the greatest wrestlers in history and Savage look so broken down, and it's also very sad to see how terribly used Bret Hart was in WCW. Main event was also terrible. Hart was right on the Figure 4 Daily interview recently. Eric Bischoff is and was an idiot. Anyway, thanks guys for the great reviews. Rest in peace, Randy Savage.
We should note, okay, as everyone, you know, puts over the Dean Malenko moment, it was like, this is just WCW to its core. It was like the very next night on Nitro, they did the whole stiff where they stripped him of the title because he wasn't in the Battle Royal, and then they did a match at the next pay-per-view for the vacant title, and they put the belt right back on Jericho. Oh, it was like anything they got out of it, they just squandered themselves.
That's terrible.
Like, look at the reaction that got on that pay-per-view, and you just fucked the fans the next night. Stephen Smith, I just finished reading the Death of WCW book by R.D. Reynolds and Brian Alvarez, and I was surprised by the Eric Bischoff challenge to Vince McMahon, mainly because it was one of the stupider moves of WCW's that I had ever heard mentioned, alongside angles like the finger poke of doom and Goldberg being arrested. I hope you guys touch upon Vince's response, since I think it's one of Vince's finest hours. For anyone who doesn't know, he said that Eric's challenge was a cheap ploy to increase pay-per-view buys and stated, I will not appear at Turner's next pay-per-view as invited. However, if Mr. Bischoff is hell-bent on fighting me, then such a fight can be arranged at any time in any parking lot in the country, void of television cameras, photographers, and public announcement. That's true. That was Vince's response. He would fight Eric Bischoff, but without any cameras.
Roger Langford. Ah, Slamboree. I really enjoyed the entrances that WCW did during this time period. They made each pay-per-view seem special, unlike WWE, who seemed to use the same Titantron all the time. I really loved the Jericho Malenko deal. The Bischoff thing was really crappy, but I enjoyed it at the same time. At least they didn't have a fake Vince come to the ring. The top of the card really shows where WCW lost its way in 1998. Bret just meant nothing, and of course it wouldn't be a WCW pay-per-view without a shitty main event tag with a fucked finish. Classic WCW. 7 out of 10 for the Jericho beatdown and the entrance.
Hanzi. Question, since Josh Matthews isn't on Raw, does that mean he was always meant for SmackDown, and does that count as a SmackDown talent being on Raw every week? Also, now Raw signs Riley, so I guess from now on, it doesn't count since he was a part of SmackDown technically. I don't know, were the announcers ever brand exclusive?
I don't know. Would you count Tony Chimmel? I mean, if you count Tony Chimmel, then... I wouldn't say Matthews would count though. I don't think Tony Chimmel would count either.
This contest is gonna be too confusing.
I know, and that's what I said.
What should we do about Riley? I guess he is a Raw talent now.
I don't know. Well, Matt Bouchard has his thoughts in regards to Pollock's WWE draft contest, and I challenge anyone to dispute my logic. There's no way that Alex Riley should count anymore. Here's why. Regardless of where he is drafted to, he was employed by The Miz. That being the case, when he was fired, he had no job and was not part of any roster whatsoever. Therefore, when the Raw GM signed him back, he is signed to Raw. This is like other storylines where someone is fired from Raw and gets signed by Teddy Long to SmackDown. The draft is irrelevant if you leave and come back. Well,
what a mindfuck.
I don't know, man.
Fine, we won't count Riley anymore. Exclusive to Raw, then.
Oh, fine. Okay, whatever.
I'm just saying that because it makes it easier for me to count. Joshua Kachenko. John, Gray Maynard went to the same high school as Dolph Ziggler, but Maynard went to Michigan State and Ziggler went to Kent State, two different colleges. You are correct. It was high school wrestling team they were both a part of.
Sean Patterson, after listening to Review Raw, I have lost a tremendous amount of respect for Jason Agnew. Birth control is never 100%, and if she chose to have a kid, all the power to her. It's her life. There is no need to be such a jackass. Stephanie and Triple H have kids, and Vince is a grandfather. Considering the PG direction, the attempt to brand themselves as entertainment, the Don Marie legal battle, and any political ambitions Linda might have, karma will be all right.
Do we want to discuss this, or let's just leave this for... talked about this enough on the law tonight.
Well, most of these comments are about that.
Okay. I did not even... Well, let's just go through these, then. We'll see.
Well, we'll just read some of them, because you'll have already talked about it to death.
Well, let me get your thoughts, Wade. Do you think this was a... Karma looking or Kia Stevens, you know, sitting down and saying, I want to start a family right now.
Of course, I really don't. I really have a hard time thinking that somebody in the middle of a push, the biggest push of their careers, would willingly decide to just get pregnant and start a family and have a baby at this moment in time. So I never want to say, you know, a guarantee, but I'm almost sure that this was not a planned pregnancy. And I think that's where some of the criticism goes. But this is only assuming that, you know, she was having unprotected sex or maybe, yeah, mostly that. However, as many people point out, contraception is never 100% effective. And so if that was the case, then she can't be blamed, of course, you know, mistakes happen.
I don't even understand the comparison to Stephanie and Triple H having kids. Completely different set of circumstances, like not even in the same.
I think maybe Sean's just saying how, you know, these people would have compassion because they know what it's like to have kids,
okay.
Which I think is irrelevant too.
Jay Hunter, just finished Review of Raw. Holy shit, Jason Agnew. I agree that Karma has squandered the biggest opportunity of her career with an untimely and avoidable pregnancy, but wow, his darkly sarcastic humor is guaranteed to piss off every listener, except for maybe me, Steve Rowe, Dan Powers, and Eric Kremer. I'm impressed at how candid and steadfast Jason's views are, but wow, he spouted some caustic words.
Yeah. Well, that's Jay. I mean, I will say, you know, knowing him, I think he was playing it up a little just for the viewers, for the listeners out here. So, come on. Let's be okay. Some of these are very kind of vicious, actually. Some of these comments, I don't know if I should get into them.
It doesn't matter.
All right. Thulani Mabuza and Cube. So I guess Jason Agnew thinks Matt Capitelli squandered his shot at the big time by getting a brain tumor, right? What makes him think that Kia was irresponsible? Unless he's the father and was caught popping Tic Tacs instead of birth control pills. There's no contraception that's 100% effective. You make it sound like she was having unprotected sex with the entire WWE locker room. I wonder if that's your opinion of her as a person, or just the African-American woman in general. A simple sorry, even if you didn't mean it, would have been the right thing to do. Funny sarcasm, dark humor, etc. are just euphemisms for racist, misogynist, and bigot. That is ridiculous.
I'm sorry. I'm not even going to respond to that, because once you're bringing race into this, nothing involving race was ever stated in
absolutely
any of these
not
comments.
Are
so you know what, Thulani? You don't even warrant a response. Dave Zagurski. Pro wrestling is an entertainment business where the window of opportunity for an up-and-coming star is suffocatingly short. We should look at all the female actors and singers who put off having children until they've established themselves, and how Karma has unfairly forced WWE to ditch her character. Also, I think Jason Agnew has a very progressive worldview, more progressive than Kia Stevens, and not misogynist at all. Kia was raised in California, so she must have heard of Planned Parenthood, abortion clinics, etc. I hope she's happy with her life and has peace with God. But Agnew is 100% right. My goodness.
Oh man,
some heated debate here.
It gets ugly, and I don't. Let's leave it. Let's leave it to just say, you know, congratulations on the baby, and hopefully the baby has a wonderful, healthy birth.
Let me just. I'm just gonna throw in my own thought process here. Okay, Wei. You are running You are in the spot of where you are. You have signed Kia Stevens, and you are going to give her everything. You're going to attach a rocket to her back and push her. And 6 weeks into the push, she comes to you saying, I need a year off. I got pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? A year later, she comes back. Are you going to put those same amount of resources behind her when you know that possibility? What if that happens again?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's fair. I'm not saying that, you can't judge men and women in the same case because it's completely different. I'm just saying from the point of view of the promoter, as a non-humanitarian, that is what the company is going to think when she comes back next year. Are we going to push her to the moon?
I don't even think it has to do with whether or not this will happen again. I think just knowing Vince McMahon and how vengeful some of the people in that company are, for the simple fact that you messed up our plans, that deserves you getting punished in some way. At least not punished, but not getting the same push that you got.
There is a huge difference in going to your employer, knowing the plans they have for you, because this is a plan. I don't think I'm shocking anybody here, but these talents, yes, they're human beings, everybody, but they're also commodities. That is why they are paid a salary, because they are superstars and divas that we promote and that we make money off of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge difference between Kia Stevens coming saying, listen, I know you guys have these plans for me. I want to start a family. And those are my plans versus showing up at television and saying, I'm pregnant and I need a year off.
Well, listen, that when you put it that way, I mean, I'm almost positive that this is not something that she planned. If it was, then it would have been incredibly selfish.
I'm not
going to
speak for her because I don't know the exact details. But
yeah,
there's a huge difference.
You would assume that this was not planned, okay?
Yeah.
And this is just something that happened. And if it's something that unfortunately did happen, then then you can't help but just kind of feel sorry. And, you know, maybe if this was unplanned and she just made a mistake and decided to go through with it, then you can't fault her. You really can't. So, it depends. It depends what her story is and depends how they see it.
Let's finish off. Do we have a...
Let's see. Ian Cameron. After listening to the podcast, I was shocked that John didn't know that Zack Ryder was the WWE Internet Champion. The Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter logos on it. So it wasn't an intercontinental replica he had with Cena. I was shocked that they allowed it on Raw. It is usually just seen on Z True Long Island Story. I didn't know what it was either. I don't really watch Z True Long Island Story. I'm not a huge fan of the humor. But you know what? It's kudos to the guy. It's gotten some good steam.
And finally, Angelus Fitzgerald. Is there any chance of you guys reviewing the Great American Bash 1989? It's actually one of the better shows the NWA put together, and it got Best Major Show from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. And, Way, it features a match between Sting and the Great Muta, which was on Impact this past week.
What?
Eric Young plays the Great Muta on Impact this week.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, then, yes, there is a chance, because that is what we will be reviewing next week.
Oh, wait, it's like Angelus. You put that in there just to segue.
Yeah, not
You're
really.
So smart.
Not really.
All right, well, we will watch the Great American Bash 1989 for next week, and that's going to wrap things up. Thanks to everybody for your feedback, and one thing I just want to end this with, for everybody out there, I know this week there was a lot of heated debate, pro and con. I never want us to feel that there is an environment out there where we are just going to simply ignore negative comments or just, you know, fuck off if you disagree with our opinion. I always want there to be an open forum that, whether positive or negative, I want people to know that you are more than welcome to voice that displeasure. Because living in a bubble where people are only going to say positive things is completely ridiculous.
Oh,
and
terrible.
To get bent out of shape over that. Positive or negative, I am always a fan of constructive feedback. I'm not a fan of is the fuck you, asshole, that comment.
All we ask for is for you to put a bit of thought behind your statements, and we'll certainly do our best to read them to the public.
So that's going to wrap us up, everybody. Big thank you for downloading the show. We'll be back on Tuesday with Review of Raw, and Friday with Review and Impact. And, of course, you can get all your information liveaudiowrestling.com, facebook.com/liveaudiowrestling, and facebook.com/reviewaway, which is spelt Review, A-W, AI. And that'll wrap things up, Way. Oh, shit, music to go out with.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, I'm unprepared. This is usually your deal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go out with... this song was huge in 1989. We'll go out with that.
Do you know what song?
No, I gotta find something.